Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday at long last, August 16th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello. Happy weekend.
It is already weekend for you. Thank you for joining us on your weekend. Also with me today, Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Bring it to us. We want it. We must have it.
Clearly, he means the weekend, Friday. And it's absolutely time.
It looks scrumptious this Friday. I cannot wait to gobble it up. Oh,
Kelly, it's happened again.
It has. I'm not sure how we get out of it this time, but we'll have to do our best. Let's see if we can get on track with a little jobs discussion. Apple has released a report talking about the job footprint they have here in the US, and Shirley, you wrote this up.
Yeah, TLDR, it's really big. So Apple says its job footprint just in America, just in the 50 United States, is 2.4 million people. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people that work and have something involved in Apple because of their work. Now, to break it down a little bit, I think it said 1.9 million of those people are in what it described as the app economy. Mm-hmm. Now, we were having a little discussion before trying to work out what exactly that means. Now, what it certainly means is developers, both independent and larger. And we think it also means it's going to mean things like maybe tech support for some companies that have app store apps. And, you know, it extends quite a lot. So I think that number probably should be taken with a pinch of salt. You two may disagree with me slightly. But equally, the top line figure of 2.4 million people, I think the fact that Apple said it, you know, Apple itself directly employs 90,000 people across all 50 states. And that's going to be increased by 20,000 by 2023. These are serious, serious numbers. Apple says that by 2023, it's going to offer an extraordinary amount of money to the US economy. I think it was $3.5 billion or something will be have generated from Apple input into the US economy. So this is serious, serious figures. And it's, you know, worth, I think, looking at in and of itself, and also worth looking at in context at the time where, as I understand it, some political candidates are and politicians from around the world, frankly, not just in the US, are attacking big tech. Mm-hmm. It's worth looking at the context of a trade war in China with China, and perhaps Apple trying to demonstrate that if this escalates any further, it is that could have a detrimental effect on thousands upon thousands, if not millions, of jobs in the United States. Mm-hmm. I think this is all that is what is behind this whole report, as you say.
Yeah.
The broader context, may I, Kelly?
Yeah, absolutely.
The broader context of this report is Apple's been touting numbers like this for a while. And of course, those numbers have grown. I'm not sure how much we should read into the specific timing of this report, because I believe that they have come out roughly at this time every year since they started doing it. But a lot of it is aimed at the in hammering home, like Apple. Where to start with this? Apple is essentially paying attention to tooting its own horn, which is something that the company used to not do very often.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some of the things that Charlotte just rattled off are a big part of that, but there's also the taxation issue. Apple is the biggest taxpayer in the United States of America, unlike some other big tech giants, which paid little or nothing in taxes. And yet the company is still criticized for incorrectly criticized for offshoring profits, which actually isn't how it works at all. The So a big part of what this message for is to remind people how much of a footprint Apple has in the country. And it's aimed at politicians, it's aimed at ordinary people, but it's really aimed at politicians, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
If mm-hmm. you take this number at face value, which you should not do, but if you do, Apple employs 0.73% of the American population.
Supports.
Correct. Employs yeah. or supports the employment of.
Yes.
0.73% of the population of the United States of America. And when you look at Apple's actual headcount, which is 90,000 in the U.S., Charlotte?
That's correct. Yeah, it said it employed 90,000 people directly.
Mm-hmm. When you look at that tiny footprint for how much money Apple makes, well, you know, who cares? But Apple's message here is no. There's a whole bunch of other stuff we're doing too. There are manufacturing jobs. There are all these so-called app economy jobs. Of course, like that's where you really, Charlotte mentioned having and taking those figures with a pinch of salt. I would actually advise having a large bag of salt on hand for any repeated applications that you might need, because there are a whole bunch of people that are included in that that may make $10 a year mm-hmm. from their app, or no dollars a year from their app.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like they aren't paying for their developer license with their app. So there's a whole bunch of there's this bell curve of developers, and it's a very few people at the top who are making a ton of money, like a lot of the game developers mm-hmm. and stuff. And then sure. most of the people make some or little. Mm-hmm. And then you got, actually, I don't know. Is it a bell curve? Maybe it's actually more like a, it's probably not a bell curve, is it?
It's
because
the
vast majority of developers aren't making anything.
Yeah. Right.
No, so I think there's a couple of things there. First of all, Brian is right, and it was very noticeable that Apple didn't, you know, it didn't give us average earnings for these app economy jobs.
Well, average earnings wouldn't matter anyway, because you've got folks yeah. at the top who are skewing.
My point is they didn't break it down at all.
Right.
And also, I think just to Brian's point about the kind of general PR kick behind this story, which I entirely agree with what Brian said, they also made a very big point in this report that they released about, you know, the small businesses they help to grow and that mm. kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
I agree so, with that.
Yeah, they said, you know, they picked out, they said there was 9,000 American suppliers that they spent $60 billion with in 2018. That supports 450,000 of those jobs.
Not necessarily 100% of those jobs.
Of course. Well, absolutely.
But it's still a lot of jobs, and it's a lot of transportation people, right? People like carting supplies from point A to point B. It's shipping people mm. who are involved in shipping materials over to China for final assembly. It is a vast network of people.
Yeah, look, you can't deny that Apple makes a genuine, significant, huge by any standards contribution to jobs and the US economy. And I suspect if they started doing this kind of figures in other countries as well, it would be pretty significant depending on where you were. But I think Brian's bag of salt is also probably a good seasoning for this.
I'm not trying to you know, like dump on Apple. I'm not, absolutely. It is Apple's job to spin these numbers, and I frankly suspect that Apple could have spun them a lot bigger if they'd really wanted to. I actually kind of trust Apple's numbers on this. I'm just saying, don't think that there are 1.9 million app developers who are making a full time living on this.
No,
that ain't happening.
No, and also not. And like, I think you're right that you do have to have a bit of, I don't know if respect is the right word, but there is some credibility to Apple saying, look what we contribute to the economy. And I think that is a reasonable point for a company of Apple's size to make.
Mm-hmm. And just,
that is a totally reasonable point.
Just for the record, I did go and look, and Google has 98,000, almost 99,000 employees as of the end of 2018.
That's direct employees.
Yes, full-time employees. Yeah,
it's probably contract and full-time.
Yeah. Well, this says full-time, so that's what I was going with. And it doesn't say if that's strictly in the United States or worldwide. Walmart employs 2.1 million people worldwide. Whoa. In the whole world, 1.4 million in the U.S.
Whoa.
So that's for a little bit of context. Yeah.
Yeah, and they were for a long time the both the world's largest employer and the U.S. largest employer. And to be fair, they would still remain that because they are actually paying those people directly.
Yeah.
Yeah, Apple is only supporting, you know, almost all of those 2.4 million jobs that they're touting.
Yeah, it's 90,000, right. As we said, is the direct.
Yeah. The footprint of a couple million people, like, that's the footprint we're talking about, is, like, everyone in the world that works for Walmart is how many people Apple is impacting in some way.
Yeah, and it really isn't to be sniffed at. I was totally wrong about the amount Apple wants to contribute to the U.S. economy. Just be sitting down when I give you this number, because it's staggering. Apple said it is on pace to directly contribute $350 billion to the U.S. economy by 2023.
That's a staggering
figure.
Not total. Just in that year. Yeah.
That's a staggering figure.
It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm 100%. But it's also interesting to think about, particularly for people who have sort of been watching Apple in some fashion or another for a really long time, like Brian and I, sort of remembering that there was a time when we were kind of in the opposite of this, where like Apple was always the last on the list. Like, well, I guess if you're going to include everybody, you have to include Apple in some sort of calculation or talking about employment or anything like that. And like, this is always the kind of stuff that makes me think about, you know, retail stores and people saying it was insanity for Apple to open retail stores. Who's going to do that? Nobody buys Apple stuff anyway. And, you know, just thinking about the evolution of that in what is relatively a short amount of time.
What was the cow company?
Gateway.
Gateway, right?
PC.
And Gateway was the Prusa. I can't believe it. It's funny. I literally forgot. I honestly forgot Gateway's existence there. I can remember just the stupid cows and the
fact cows. They had cows. Yeah. Well, it took me a minute to remember their name.
Gateway's failure.
Absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
All right. So Gateway was a company that sold direct to consumers.
When?
In the 90s. Back when the PC wars were a thing. Late 90s, early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Like when I was at school.
Sure.
Okay.
Your pigtails. Someone was probably like, you know, dipping your pigtail into an Inkwell, right?
Now we have to explain Inkwells. Thanks, Brian.
Anyway, Gateway sold direct, but then they opened these retail stores. And when Apple announced its retail stores, the fact that Gateway had failed with its retail stores was the LOL proof that Apple was the LOL company that was making the LOL mistake. And,
like, you know, literally, the Gateway stores were in the process. Like, anybody that still had them in, like, malls where they were, they all had these giant going out of business signs on them. If they weren't just an empty place in the mall where a Gateway store used to be, like, at the moment when Gateway was still in the process of closing all those stores, because, of course, it was dumb to think that you could sell computers to people and have that be the only thing in the store. What kind of fools were they for doing this? And then here comes Apple going, oh, yeah. We're totally going to open stores and sell computers directly to people. Yeah. So everybody thought Apple was absolutely out of their minds for making that decision. And here we are, how many tens of thousands of employees later? So, yeah, I think that's the kind of stuff I think about when I see these kind of stories, like the kind of footprint and the impact that they have. And it's one of the things that I always like at WWDC each year when they talk about the impact that they have on the developer community. That's part of what I like about getting to see that, is when they talk about what kind of reach they have with that. So if you get a chance, sit down with the job report. It's a pretty interesting read. Or at least an interesting skim while you're having lunch or something. It's a pretty...
Or read Charlotte's excellent write-up.
Yes, absolutely. Read the write-up, and then if you want to dig into it more, sit down and skim the report, because it does have some interesting stuff in it.
Yeah, the thing I didn't put too much in my write-up, I did a little bit, and the thing Apple wanted to focus on, it did a case study of at least one of its supplier companies, which, you know, is nice, and it's kind of nice PR fluff. It's not, you know, it isn't news in the sense that we might cover on TMO, but it's interesting to see how Apple is having these relationships with companies that are clearly happy to talk on some kind of record mm-hmm. about their relationship with Apple.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely sit down and check that out, because it's pretty interesting. Right now, I want to talk to you about our sponsor, who's also interesting, and that's OmniFocus. OmniFocus is a to-do list manager, project management, help you get all your things done. And what they do, according to their tagline, is accomplish more every day. You can get OmniFocus on macOS, you can get it on iOS, and there's even an Apple Watch complication. So you can you can add and check off and view all of the tasks that you have today right on your arm. You can even use OmniFocus for web, which is a new feature this summer. So if you're a work PC person, you can still track all your tasks and do everything as long as you have a screen that has a web browser attached. You can set everything up if you're a GTD person, or if you just really want to be a GTD person. This is a trusted system, since you can enter your tasks on whatever screen you've got in front of you. And you can upgrade to the pro version and even get further customization. You can get Apple Script functionality so that you can automate a lot of things. You get custom forecasts and lots, lots more. So download your free 2-week trial from OmniFocus.com. And we'd like to thank OmniFocus for sponsoring the show today. Our other topic, with our few minutes we have left, is the EU is going to court with Apple over something happening in Ireland, and Ireland's not happy about it. And I'm going to let Charlotte translate this into English for the rest of us.
Yes, sort of. So as we've known for a while, Apple does a lot of business in Ireland. There's a big tax base in Ireland and so on. And lots of countries use Ireland, as I understand it, as an EU tax base. Tax lawyers, feel free to email me and tell me why I'm wrong. But the EU didn't like, and made clear a while back, it didn't like a deal that Ireland, which is obviously a member state of the EU, had done with Apple over taxation. And in August 2016, it told Ireland to claim the money, which is worth about $14.4 billion, told it to get it off Apple, and Ireland was like, no. So now... the EU is taking this to its second highest court, and that hearing, we learned today, will take place on the 16th and 17th of September, so pretty much exactly a month from when we are having this conversation. So that's, it's interesting for a few reasons. One, it's interesting because Margrethe Vestager, who is the commissioner in charge of antitrust stuff in the EU, on its executive body, her and her colleagues on the commission are leaving soon. Their term will end. So she's trying to get this done, I think, before she departs. I think that's part of this story. September 17th and 18th. But yeah, pretty much a month from today. Mm-hmm. Apple clearly doesn't think it's done anything wrong. It and the Irish government think it made a deal. Apple obviously feels it paid what the Irish government wanted from it, and there should be no issue. The EU has been on a broad, general approach to attack, if you want to put it that way, get tax money from, deal with, however you want to phrase it, big tech companies. We've covered a lot of the different cases on the Mac Observer. Apple is obviously a very big one that is in the focus of the commission at the moment. So this is an interesting one to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in and of itself, $14.4 billion, like, is Tim Cook going to lose massive sleep over that, given the amount of money Apple has swashing around? No, but it is a problem if... So Apple's complaint, I think, is that the EU is, and I don't want to get too much into the politics of this, but the EU has kind of made itself a supranational tax body when actually it made a deal with a member state.
Mm-hmm.
And that has all sorts of implications, which I won't go on to here. But equally, Apple, like at the basic level, feels it did a deal. The Irish government feels it did a deal. You know, it kind of links back to what we were saying before, that Apple is supporting jobs and putting money into various economies. One of those non-US economies is Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
The Irish government clearly is happy with that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so this court case is going to be very interesting to watch for a while. And the thing I don't know, and what I'll be looking into next week and sort of keeping my ears out to hear as the weeks rumble on, is okay, so as often happens in court cases, you have a decision and then someone appeals the decision and then you go to the next bit and the next. Do you know what I mean? These things, yeah, don't just have one thing and then they end. So it'll be interesting if that can happen in this case as well. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, on the 18th of September or whenever the court comes back after that, they're going to say, no, Apple, write that check and that's the end of it.
Right. And part of why this was interesting to me was because a lot of the headlines that I've seen, and at least one of the articles that I sort of glanced at, sort of made it sound like it was Apple and Ireland who were going to court, and it sort of seemed like they were going to court against each other, and that's not the case. And
no, that is not how I understand it. Yeah. The Irish government says, and this is a quote, it says it profoundly disagrees with the commission's approach. We actually reported that was the commission's position a while back, and the commission has reiterated that. Mm-hmm. The Irish government has reiterated that it profoundly disagrees with the commission's approach. It's also said it is engaging fully with the process, ensuring the best presentation of the state's position, i.e. we did a deal with Apple, stop chasing Apple for money when we didn't ask Apple for the money.
Yeah. And Apple's been in Ireland for decades. Like, this isn't, it isn't like they just moved in. Like, they've been in Ireland for years and years and years and years and years.
Lots of tech companies have a European base in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Let me strip down the political reality of what's happening here.
Okay.
And that is this. The EU is structured in such a way that individual countries control their own taxation. International law is structured in such a way that allows multinational companies to do things like get a sweetheart deal or have a country construct all of its tax law to essentially be a sweetheart deal. That then allows them to use licensing arrangements and subsidiary companies to funnel the profits from business in lots of different EU member countries to the country with the lowest tax rate on profits. In this case, that would be Ireland, where it's essentially zero taxes on profits.
Okay.
And what the EU is essentially saying here is, oh my God, we're really pissed off that you're doing what everything allows you to do. And we're going to try to stop that.
All right.
Yeah. Which goes back to my point about there being concern, that in the EU is deciding to become a supranational tax enforcement body, which it's not currently designed to do. It is, there are international laws that apply to the blocks, there are trade rules that apply to the blocks, and all sorts of other things. But, and there's even there's a currency. The Irish Ireland has, its currency is the euro, along with a number of other countries within the EU. But, you know, the Ireland did still have the right to make this deal with Apple. Right. And as Brian says, the EU has gone, but we don't like that deal.
Yeah.
And now it's
kind of interesting. But then there's a flip side to all this. There's a flip side to all of this. And the flip side is that Germany and Spain and France in particular, and all of the other EU countries are upset because Apple is making millions or tens of millions or even many tens of millions of dollars of profits from selling products within their borders, yet they're not seeing any tax revenues from those profits because all those profits are actually being legally channeled through sometimes Luxembourg, mostly Ireland. And they're a little bit cranky about it because it turns out that they need to pay for the public services that are supporting those sales, like, you know, roads, like the education system to educate the employees who can then sell the products, like, you know, all of the environmental things that it takes to make a country actually livable. And those other countries want their fair share of the taxes from local profits. And that's part of what's guiding the EU here. But at the same time,
I'm not, you might be right. I think what's And welcome to Mansplain Friday on the Mac Observer's Daily Observations. No, but what I think more is going on here than actually, I don't, because this is not like the, obviously the, you know, German-French access is very powerful within the EU, whatever. But what's going on here is a commissioner, an outgoing commissioner who has spent a lot of her time really targeting on a variety of issues, privacy, and she, all sorts of things, going after big tech companies. She is trying to make it seem like she's getting a fair deal from Apple.
Okay. Interesting. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's wrapped up in this. So it's going to be really interesting next month when we see this go down, is what it sounds like. Right, Charlotte?
Yeah, I think this is going to be one that's well worth watching.
All right. And if you would like to send donations for us to send Charlotte to Luxembourg so that she can cover this live and in person, you can do that with observations@macobserver.com. You can write to us and let us know how you'd like to help. There'll be a telethon over Labor Day weekend. That's how that works, right, Brian?
Yep.
You can also catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. I would like to thank both of you for being here today. Obviously, this is a whole nother discussion, and we're going to continue having it as events develop. Charlotte, thank you so much for coming by today.
Pleasure. Happy weekend.
Also with me today, Brian Chaffin. Thank you for coming by, Brian.
Thanks for having me. We appreciate it.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow, or not tomorrow. I will not. I will be wishing all of you an awesome weekend tomorrow because it will be Saturday. I will talk to all of you on Monday. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.